Welcome to the Principled Podcast, brought to you by LRN. The Principled Podcast brings together the collective wisdom on ethics, business and compliance, transformative stories of leadership, and inspiring workplace culture. Listen in to discover valuable strategies from our community of business leaders and workplace changemakers.
Hello and welcome to the latest edition of LRN's Principled Podcast. LRN is celebrating 25 years of helping companies behave better. My name is Ben DiPietro. I'm the editor of LRN's ENC Pulse newsletter. Please find that and subscribe. And we're happy to have Katie Lawler of U.S. Bank. She's the chief ethics officer there, global ethics officer. Welcome, Katie.
Thanks, Ben. It's a pleasure to be here.
Tell the listeners about the career path you took that led to your current role at U.S. Bank. How did you wind up there?
Sure. I've been with U.S. Bank since 2002. I started my career actually as an employment lawyer, and I joined the bank in the law division in 2002 as an employment lawyer working with human resources. And after about 5 years, I got an offer from HR, kind of the nicest thing that can happen to a lawyer. Your client offers you a job. And HR offered me a role in human resources, and I went over to HR. I did a variety of things, and I spent 9 years, actually, in human resources. I worked as the HR director for our retail branch network for a year, and then I moved over to manage employee relations, and that was always our long-term plan. And so for 8 years, I had our employee relations function, but also had a number of other functions that sort of came and went, if you will. I managed our HR communications team for a period. I managed our diversity and inclusion program, employee engagement. And for the last year and a half that I was in HR, I was also the chief risk officer for human resources. Throughout all that time, though, that 8 years I had employee relations, our ethics program at U.S. Bank sat in employee relations. So I was responsible for our hotline, our code, our training, sort of the basic elements of an ethics program. So then I came back to the law division in mid-2016, came back to the law division in a legal role, and then 6 months later was asked to build a standalone ethics function. So it's been a really great journey of very employee-focused throughout my entire career.
You were the first chief ethics officer for the bank. How did that come about, and did that make it easier for you to craft the program, or do you wish there had been a structure in place from which you could work from?
You know, we're structured a little bit differently from probably what people typically see for an ethics program. In many companies, you'll see ethics and compliance as a combined function, and as with any large company, and particularly a highly regulated one, we have and have always had a large compliance organization. And that's part of our risk management and compliance division. And then for many years, ethics was separate and sat within human resources. And our chief human resources officer wore the dual hat. She was also nominally the chief ethics officer. But in 2016, we recognized that we had an opportunity to elevate ethics by having it be a standalone function, sort of have it be someone's day job. And we knew from the research that we were doing that operating with ethics and integrity, being a well-governed company, was a key driver of our reputation with virtually every stakeholder that we measure. And so we knew that that was really important, but we also felt that was a strength in the company. We were the only large bank on Ethisphere's list of world's most ethical companies, and we continue to be the largest bank that has been named to that list. Our employees rated ethics and trust very high on our annual employee engagement survey, but we wanted to do more. Our industry's had a lot of bumps in the road over the past 10 years, and interestingly, our regulators are really talking a lot about culture, more than they ever have before. And so we saw an opportunity here to really elevate ethics to the forefront. And so in late 2016, our then CEO made this decision. And he called me. I'd been working on some projects that had a lot of visibility to him, and he called me. I was at home. I was recovering from foot surgery, so I remember it very well. And he called me, and he said, you know, I'm talking to a lot of people about this role, but he said, I really wanted to talk to you because I think this role was made for you. And that was unbelievably flattering and kind of terrifying. He asked me if I would consider taking the role, and we talked about it. And I said, if we want it to be what it has been, then I'm really not interested because I've been there, done that. But if we want to do something new with it, yeah, I'd be very interested in it. And so we spent some more time talking about what it could look like. And he spent a lot of time thinking about what the structure should look like. And ultimately, in January of 2017, we established the Global Ethics Office as a standalone function, sort of separate from human resources, separate from compliance. And we kind of think of it as the three legs of the stool. And I was asked to lead that. And that's the role I've been in since January 2017. You asked about whether it was hard to start, you know, from scratch. And I would say yes and no, because the fundamentals were in place. We have a code of ethics with a really progressive document. We had good training. We had our hotline was well established. But there's not really a model for what a standalone ethics function does, because it's usually part of compliance. And so I didn't have a lot to go on. I did a lot of research, went to a lot of conferences. And while I didn't have a cookie cutter approach to follow, it also made it a little bit fun, because I could think about what made sense for U.S. Bank to really structure and think about how this organization would function and what we would do. So it would have been nice to have had a little more structure, you know, a model to build on, but at the same time, it gave me a lot of freedom and latitude to build what I think the company needs.
So how did your background in human resources help you then as you made that transition?
It was really valuable. I said earlier, I've spent my entire career focused on employees, and so much of ethics is helping employees make good decisions, helping the company through its employees make good decisions. And I've spent a lot of time working on issues affecting employees, both the good and the bad, you know, everything from employee misconduct to employee engagement and programs that help make the company someplace people want to be. So I've spent 20 plus years working to make the rules clear, helping employees follow the rules and addressing the situations where they didn't. The other thing that was really valuable was, you know, I've got a really deep knowledge of the business. Having been here for 17 years, I knew the organizational structure. I have relationships with people around the company, because both in legal and in HR, I had provided support to virtually every business unit in the company. So I knew the organization, I knew the business, I knew the people. But I also knew where employees might stray, because I've worked with the hotline for many years and I've worked with employment legal issues. So having that sort of baseline was really helpful.
One of your first tasks was to work with your former HR colleagues. How did that relationship with them change? What were some of the issues you had to deal with, and how did you overcome those?
You know, it was interesting. I would say there were both benefits and challenges. HR was and remains our most important partner in the ethics office. You know, I had a lot of long-term relationships with HR. I knew how HR was structured. I knew how the work got done. I knew who the key partners needed to be. But there was also some understandable tension. HR had done a good job of building the program to that point, and then it was sort of taken away from them. And many of the things that we do in ethics have an employee focus, which traditionally is HR's domain. So I think through good communication, a commitment to working together for the good of the company, you know, we worked through any bumps that came along. And I think the other thing that we were able to do over time was to get some more role clarity of what is the ethics job's role. And it was sort of new to have an outside group looking over HR's shoulder in some instances. For example, we manage the hotline. So when we get an issue reported through the hotline, for the most part, HR manages those investigations and reports them back to us, and we have to approve them for closure. And we needed to work with HR to make it clear we're not second-guessing your work. We're not trying to be critical of your work. We're trying to work with you to make sure that we have a well-documented investigation. We're a second set of eyes to help you. And so I think once we got some understanding of what the roles were and why each of us would do the pieces that we did, I think that helped a lot. And then I think the other thing that we worked through was, we're not here to plunk down an ethics program on top of the company. What we needed to do and what we wanted to do was partner with particularly HR, but also others in the company, and really just bring an ethics lens to some of the work they were already doing to help make it better. And I think that really helped strengthen the relationships when they saw that they could rely on us as subject matter experts, but we weren't going to swoop in and try to take over.
What are some of the ways that ethics and compliance people can foster these relationships with these other business units? Any tips you can share?
Yeah, I think there are two things, and I touched on them a little bit already, but really being clear about what your objectives are, understanding what the other groups need to accomplish, and then defining roles and responsibilities clearly. So I would say that's the first thing, is really getting that role clarity, understanding what each other is trying to accomplish and how you can complement each other. And then I think the second is, how can you help each other do better? How can you enhance each other's work? How can you help another group achieve their objectives? For us, one of our great success stories was with our enterprise education team. We needed to redesign our ethics training last year. And we had a really good course that we had built when I was in HR. So someone on my team had worked on it with the education team, and it was really great. We had a new learning system, and the way it had been built, technically, it couldn't just port into the new system. So we had to rebuild the training. So we took that opportunity to do a full rewrite of the course. And I had someone on my team who was the liaison working with enterprise education, and they came back and they brought me a proposal, and I was underwhelmed. I felt like it was a little bit of a step backward. We had a pretty cool training. It was a graphic novel. It was really different. And we were kind of stepping back to more of your traditional storyboard training. And so I challenged them. And I think at first, you know, they were a little down, but I also gave them some freedom. And I said, I want you to take more time. A, you know, we've historically launched this training on January 1st. There's no reason we have to. So take more time. And I want you to do something innovative, something different, something people haven't seen before. And so they wanted to do something different. And other groups that they had worked with had sort of gone that route and then pulled back at the last minute. And we let them run with it. And they came up with a concept that we got the best feedback from around the company. I had employees that I've never met email me to tell me how much they enjoyed taking their ethics training. They also took that training out and won awards for it. So it was a great partnership where by giving them some latitude and helping them understand what we were trying to accomplish, they had a big win. And then we had a big win. And so if you can find those opportunities to really let your partner do their best work in support of you, they come back and they want to work with you. So now we're doing something even more radically different for next year.
Has that success translated into other business units taking notice, and has your relationship changed with them?
Working with other parts of HR, working with our communications team, we do some really unique communications. And there are things that they've wanted to do that they haven't had a group that was willing to try. And so we've been very clear that we're willing to be your guinea pigs. Because we're trying to engage employees in a new way. We're trying to engage them on a topic that's not easy, but that's so important. And so we're trying new and different things, and we're trying to stand out and not just be traditional corporate communications that are fairly staid and steady. Our communications partners, we actually went to them. We said, we want to do something different. Now they're coming to us with ideas. What if we tried this, or what if we tried that? And we have other business units that want to be part of our communication strategy because it's so unique. We do a video series where I drive around in my car with two GoPro cameras and a guest, and we talk about how ethics connects to the business or some initiative of the company. And I have people asking if they can do the video with me. By doing things differently and having some success, others want to partner with us. And then by being flexible and willing to try new things, others come to us as well. And they say, you know, we want to try this. What do you think? And so it's been a lot of fun.
So how can ethics and compliance better articulate the case that companies that behave better perform better than those that don't? Does this message resonate in the boardroom? And how do you think ethics can make the case better?
Well, I can only speak to our boardroom. And there's no question, our leadership and our board, they get it. I mean, they know the value of doing well by doing good. They know that it is important. Some of it is their own experiences from their own professional careers, because most board members are executives or have been executives at other organizations. But I also think it's really incumbent upon those of us who work in this space to keep bringing the research forward and to keep it in front of the leadership. That's our job. Our job is to help them know what's going on out there. The work that LRN does, you know, and others in this space, but that research about how ethical behavior connects to business outcomes is really valuable. And I think it really is our responsibility as the ethics and compliance leaders to get that information in front of the leaders and help them see that. Because I think they get it, they know it, but having the hard data can be really valuable as well. But I also believe in the power of stories. So I think even just anecdotal stories can be really valuable. There's nothing as powerful as telling a story of how we won a piece of business because a customer felt that they wanted to do business with a company that was ethical. That individual story can be really powerful in helping leaders see the importance of what we're doing and the importance of what they do to operate with ethics and integrity. Because I think that's something that can be lost. It's not my job to make the company ethical. It's everybody's job to operate at the highest levels of integrity. It's my job to help provide tools, resources, and a focus on it. But every one of our leaders is responsible for it, every one of our employees. And if I can show them stories of where doing things the right way had a benefit to the company, that can be just as powerful, if not more so, than even some of the data. But I think the data tells a great story. You see the ethics quotient and the ethics premium that Ethisphere promotes, the HAL report that you all publish. All of those things are resources that we should be promoting internally to our leadership to help them make that case.
Well, Katie, I really appreciate you taking some time to join us today. Thank you so much for being here on Principled Podcast.
Thank you. It was a pleasure. And congratulations on your 25th anniversary.
Thank you so much.
We hope you enjoyed this episode. The Principled Podcast is brought to you by LRN. At LRN, our mission is to inspire principled performance in global organizations by helping them foster winning, ethical cultures rooted in sustainable values. Please visit us at LRN.com to learn more. And if you enjoyed this episode, subscribe to our podcast on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Podcasts, or wherever you listen. And don't forget to leave us a review.